My husband works with the UN, and while we were never a UN family, he was never in a family duty station. I resigned from my teaching post about 3 years ago, and he was granted a duty station just by chance. So he was sent to Sudan, and I decided I would spend some time with him and join him in Sudan. So that's what got me first to my first African country.
A real life experience. Did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah, I've traveled a lot, but I'd never been to any African country, and the culture shock was phenomenal when I arrived first. From smells to taste to streetscapes, people, it was a phenomenal culture shock. And like I do when I travel, I wanted to find some thread that would make me feel comfortable. So I would always go to a sporting venue or club when I go to a new country. In Sudan, it wasn't as easy. There was one golf club in Khartoum that it was so incongruous that I actually really, really couldn't join it.
What do you mean by incongruous?
Well, it was a lush green, sprinkled 9-hole golf course in the middle of the desert, and people in tin houses outside the big gates of the golf club. So it felt all wrong, and it was all wrong. So I joined a gym, met people through that, but I decided not to join the golf club.
You did play there one afternoon. You were asked to play at a particular event, but even that was fraught with uncertainty.
I was asked to play with some of my husband's colleagues. He doesn't play golf, my husband. So I went, really not very happily I went, but it was a Saturday, and I should remember the date. It was 14th or 15th of April, I think, but it was the day the Sudanese war broke out, and the firing started, and we could hear firing very, very close to the golf course. And I was with other UN people, and it goes to show that really very few people knew that anything was afoot. So we were locked down in the golf club, nobody knowing really what was happening.
That must have been a bit frightening.
Well, I, it, the unknown was a little bit frightening, but being with people who I thought would know better, it was quite reassuring. I think the frightening part was when I had to actually, we had to get home, and I was driving our own car on my own, and Khartoum at the best of times isn't the nicest place to drive around. So that was a very hair-raising journey, maybe about 10 kilometres. It was the most terrifying I've been.
And eventually, the political uncertainty and unrest in the Sudan meant you had to leave the country.
My husband stayed on, but we were evacuated. There was a convoy from Khartoum to Port Sudan, and then a French frigate picked us up in Port Sudan to go to Jeddah, and then we flew back over the Red Sea to Nairobi and then back home again. So it was probably 5 or 6 days on the road. Again, if I want to go back to sport and exercise and fitness and everything, I think that because I was reasonably fit and strong, it didn't take an awful lot out of me actually physically. But it was a very emotional roller coaster.
A very vivid experience to live through, I'd imagine.
Unforgettable. I was very fortunate in that we didn't have family out there. I had no responsibilities, I had no job, so it was easy for me to just to mind myself and be as strong for other people as I could. So it certainly was less challenging for me than other people.
And when you left the Sudan, your next step was Kenya, Nairobi, its capital. And again, your sporting links were things that you gravitated towards once more.
Nairobi obviously was less of a shock to me because I had been to Khartoum, and I joined the golf club there. And it sounds like I'm a big golfer, and I'm not at all, but I always do look for a link that I can meet people and local people and feel as comfortable as I can, and that's usually around sporting arenas. I played golf, fantastic golf there. It is different to Sudan because it's a very lush country and it's a lush city, and they have golf courses within, about 10 golf courses within about 20 kilometers of the city. So it's a big game. I didn't stay with it. I still felt a little bit, it was a little bit elitist. So I went back to my old roots and I looked up the hockey union in Kenya. And from there, I was invited to coach the women's under 21 hockey team to prepare them for the World Cup qualifiers that were to be held in Namibia in December.
And what's hockey like in Kenya? You know, it might not be that well known. There's obviously the colonial link there in terms of where the origin of the sport would come from, but is it a widely played sport in Kenya?
Yeah, it was. Definitely was. And the colonial impact certainly is huge. Nairobi was also, there's a huge Indian population in Nairobi who also would have brought hockey. The city park, hockey stadium, was once something beautiful. And now it's less so. We'll talk about that again. But the Sikh Union then have a beautiful, beautiful pitch, beautiful stadium, and they play a lot of hockey and a lot of cricket within that stadium.
So here is Elaine McDermott, former Ireland international, managing the under 21 Kenya international side. Tell us about the players you worked with and what you had to work with.
It brought me back actually to when I started playing hockey myself, and maybe from a Connacht perspective, in that the facilities and the equipment were really less than they should have been and not as good nearly as they should have been. But as usual, in those situations, you find amazing volunteers and amazing coaches and amazing players, and that's what I did find. The players, there's a very interesting youth development course there. A Dutch guy has started it up, and he encourages young people from the slums to play hockey. So they get collected on the bus every Saturday, and they go and they get fed, which is the most important thing, and they go to the city park and they play. And he has brought forward some really fantastic players, including some of the girls that I was working with. So I was working with girls from that program, as well as girls who were very wealthy and university goers. So the contrast was very interesting. And it took me a while to know how to deal with it all. The Dutch guy, Eric, also has a lovely program for those girls in that he gets them educated, sends them away to boarding schools. Works with psychologists with the girls, and he's done amazing work. But in trying to get that national squad together, I would have to try and get players from Mombasa, which is an 8-hour bus journey, down from Kikuyu, and then the local girls in Nairobi. So it was geographically very challenging. I would love a longer time to set a better structure there. But people on the ground, as always, the volunteers on the ground, the coaches were fantastic.
Was English the working language? Did most of the girls have English?
Yeah, actually they did and they do. And Nairobians certainly speak really, really very good English, very proper English, in fact. But I did learn some Kiswahili, and I loved using it, the odd little word, and the girls would laugh uproariously at my trying. So that also broke down barriers, which was very useful.
Well, it sounds like you immersed yourself in this, Elaine. Competitively, what were you and the Kenyan under 21 team working towards?
We were working towards qualifying for the World Cup, the under 21 World Cup. And so the qualifiers were in Namibia, and they were due to be at the beginning of December. So I had a 5-month lead in, which wasn't a lot, but it wasn't bad, and we were really getting places. About 2 weeks before we were due to fly, we heard that they were postponed. And it kind of is indicative of the organization of hockey, maybe in Africa, certainly in Kenya, that there was no explanation. There was a little bit of rumor that some of the other African national teams weren't just quite ready. And that meant that the girls who were under 21 last year may not qualify for under 21 this year. And so it was very, I thought, very disrespectful to the players and to the coaches who had put in the time. And it was too easily done and too easily announced without anybody checking it out.
Standard-wise, how would you describe the standard? Like, Kenya has a long, proud association in sport when it comes to, say, track and field athletics for both men and women. In terms of hockey, what were your impressions?
Again, I would go back to when I was playing myself on grit pitches, because a lot of the girls still play on what they call marum or a grit sandy pitch. They have only two maybe AstroTurf pitches, one very bad one and the one in the Sikh Union. So it was they weren't ready. The standard isn't quite there because the game on grit is very different to AstroTurf. So they were in that transition time, which when I started to play, it was also a transition time for Ireland between grit and AstroTurf. So they're beautifully athletic. The girls were really athletic. And I know that a lot of the Dutch teams will choose athletic players rather than hockey players. So there was certainly a lot to work with. The facilities were very difficult. And I think, and also the geography of the country is very difficult. I think the girls would have been really, really ready to go if we'd had a bit more time on the AstroTurf.
Your time with the under-21s has come to an end, but they will get their chance this year to try and qualify for the World Cup?
Yeah, I hope so. They just had a session. I was on to them this weekend. They just had their first session back after Christmas. We're hoping that they will go to Namibia now in April. The girls who were under-21 last year has been confirmed that they will still qualify. So, I can't get them out of my mind. I think it would be fantastic to go there, and I might sneak over to Namibia if it all happens.
Kenya's number one hockey supporter now overseas.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
You're back in Ireland now since just before Christmas, Elaine. Has your coaching stint with the Kenyan national under-21s given you a taste for maybe doing some more coaching here in Ireland? What's going to be the next step for you here now that you're back home?
I've found out that since I stopped teaching PE, that I can't let sport go out of my life. And when I had the time, I started to do strength and conditioning myself. I was never a gym goer, but over in both in Khartoum and Nairobi, I started to go to the gym. And I realized that it is actually really critical, no matter how active you are in your life, that as you get to menopausal age, mid-40s onwards, our muscles do atrophy. So I did a course in personal trainer and strength and conditioning while I was away, and I'm going to start strength and conditioning for menopausal women in Sligo here.
This is your next project?
This is my next plan. I hope to start something out locally where I live in Ross's Point. We have a meeting on Sunday about that. And I believe in it. I'm not a business person, but I believe in this. So I'm really going to go for it and see what happens.
And from people you talk to, there's a need for this?
Yeah. I think there definitely is a need, and people do appreciate there is a need. And I know that there are classes galore, and people do yoga and Pilates and walk and run. But I think that we need to really concentrate on strength building, especially for women, upper body strength building as we get older. So there is a need for it. I'm interested to see how Sunday goes. I'm excited. I think it's very, very important.
And throughout your own life, like, sport is such a central part of your life since you were young. You've played various sports at a high level. Has that crystallised things for you in a way now?
I'm interested in younger people in sport now at the moment as well, because they are all brought to all of the activities, and they are pushed into activities and want to do activities. But I always believe that if you want to do something, you're going to do it on your own regardless. I've always gravitated towards sport, no matter where I am, and multiple sports. And I think that no matter how active you are when you're younger, it's really gets increasingly more important to stay active as we get older. We're all living longer, our lifespans are lengthening, but I'm not sure if our health spans are matching the lifespans. So that's what we've got to focus on now, I think, is to have good quality of life for as long as we live.